English Listening Comprehension Test Spring 2001 Advanced Level. This test is in four parts. In parts 1, 2, and 3, you will answer the questions asked in the booklet by choosing the correct alternative answer, according to what you have heard. Mark each answer on the answer sheet. The test is about to begin. Listen to the first part straight through.
Today, we will hear Samuel Goldbloom talking to us about something very special in the world of American publishing.
One woman is responsible for getting Americans back into the habit of reading. One woman on TV. It's unreal. But Oprah Winfrey sells more books than anyone else in America. How in the world can anyone make a discussion about a book that the viewers haven't even seen into exciting TV viewing? Well, most of the time, the Oprah Winfrey Show features movie stars, ideal kitchens, a mixture aimed at women. Once a month, she has Oprah's book club, and 13 million people watch. She takes books that focus on issues, things like cheating husbands, growing up poor, adopted children. Oprah's specialty is to get a discussion over dinner with the author and four or five viewers who've read the book. They concentrate on how they relate to the book, how each of them responds to such questions as, could you really be friends with the leading character? This innovation, coupled with Oprah's own vivid replies, allows ordinary old ho-hum TV book time to be turned into really fascinating stuff. It's a marketing strategy, and it has moved over 30 million books, making a number of authors millionaires. Despite its commercialism, Nobel Prize winner Toni Morrison calls it a revolution, because Oprah cuts right across class and race. Yet, most of Oprah's picks are actually written by women. A lot have to do with men committing adultery or acting abusively. Women nurturing. She herself refers back to growing up in Mississippi, discovering that her simple, small-town life was shared by characters in Maya Angelou's book, which she checked out of the local library. Maya and Oprah. It's a case of two strong, creative women with a strong sense of identity. Oprah feels that it's not just that books teach us. They teach us something about ourselves, something we really can't get anywhere else. And they allow us to take that information about ourselves, hold it up in front of us. They somehow make it concrete to us and let us reflect over it. In order to achieve this same process on her show, Oprah approaches the story as if it's real, allowing the medium of television to blur the distinction from reality. How does she do it? Choose one bestseller after another. She chooses what she likes, drawing from her own private sense of what is important, something having nothing to do with current literary tastes. Many of the books she chooses have previously sold only 20 to 30,000 copies, mostly to libraries. After her book club announcement, the sales easily rocket to 1 million. Oprah makes all the final choices herself. She notifies the author and the publisher, who have to sign strict agreements not to publicize in advance. And imagine, the poor publisher has to be able to produce and ship about 1 million books in unmarked boxes within a week. But while all this is feverishly taking place, Oprah Winfrey takes the weekend off, curls up in a favorite chair, and reads three novels back to back. That's her idea of relaxation.
Now listen to the same discussion in six sections. Look at questions 1 and 2.
Today, we will hear Samuel Goldbloom talking to us about something very special in the world of American publishing.
One woman is responsible for getting Americans back into the habit of reading. One woman on TV. It's unreal. But Oprah Winfrey sells more books than anyone else in America. How in the world can anyone make a discussion about a book that the viewers haven't even seen into exciting TV viewing? Well, most of the time, the Oprah Winfrey Show features movie stars, ideal kitchens, a mixture aimed at women. Once a month, she has Oprah's book club, and 13 million people watch. She takes books that focus on issues, things like cheating husbands, growing up poor, adopted children.
Answer questions 1 and 2. Look at questions 3 and 4.
Oprah's specialty is to get a discussion over dinner with the author and 4 or 5 viewers who've read the book. They concentrate on how they relate to the book, how each of them responds to such questions as, could you really be friends with the leading character? This innovation, coupled with Oprah's own vivid replies, allows ordinary old ho-hum TV book time to be turned into really fascinating stuff.
Answer questions 3 and 4, then look at questions 5 and 6.
It's a marketing strategy, and it has moved over 30 million books, making a number of authors millionaires. Despite its commercialism, Nobel Prize winner Toni Morrison calls it a revolution, because Oprah cuts right across class and race. Yet, most of Oprah's picks are actually written by women. A lot have to do with men committing adultery or acting abusively. Women nurturing. She herself refers back to growing up in Mississippi, discovering that her simple, small-town life was shared by characters in Maya Angelou's book, which she checked out of the local library. Maya and Oprah. It's a case of two strong, creative women with a strong sense of identity.
Answer questions 5 and 6. Look at questions 7 and 8.
Oprah feels that it's not just that books teach us. They teach us something about ourselves, something we really can't get anywhere else. And they allow us to take that information about ourselves hold it up in front of us. They somehow make it concrete to us and let us reflect over it. In order to achieve this same process on her show, Oprah approaches the story as if it's real, allowing the medium of television to blur the distinction from reality.
Answer questions 7 and 8, then look at questions 9 and 10.
How does she do it, choose one bestseller after another? She chooses what she likes, drawing from her own private sense of what is important, something having nothing to do with current literary tastes. Many of the books she chooses have previously sold only 20 to 30,000 copies, mostly to libraries. After her book club announcement, the sales easily rocket to 1 million.
Answer questions 9 and 10. Look at questions 11 and 12.
Oprah makes all the final choices herself. She notifies the author and the publisher, who have to sign strict agreements not to publicize in advance. And imagine, the poor publisher has to be able to produce and ship about 1 million books in unmarked boxes within a week. But while all this is feverishly taking place, Oprah Winfrey takes the weekend off, curls up in a favorite chair, and reads 3 novels back to back. That's her idea of relaxation.
Answer questions 11 and 12. This is the second part of the test. You will hear this part twice. Listen to this part straight through.
I'm very pleased to talk to Jack Shills today. Jack, you're associated with the charity Midland Trekking. Would you tell us about your organisation?
We focus on giving 16-year-olds hands-on experience trekking here in the British Midlands. Our courses typically last from a fortnight to a month, teaching skills and strengthening minds and bodies. We accept both paying customers as well as teenagers on grants. You see, we have a bit of funding from a couple of local foundations, but this situation may soon change.
Yes, why is that?
The Ministry of Education has recently come up with a scheme to offer all 16-year-olds what they call a growing up course. They're very concerned that many adolescents find it difficult to make the transition between school and adult life.
What's the precise problem?
many school leavers mature too slowly, which harms their chances of getting a job or a place at a university. There are, in fact, 100,000-plus teenagers who fail to progress satisfactorily after leaving school at 16, and they will be the primary target group in the ministry scheme. And remember, this is a considerable percentage of school leavers.
How will this be funded?
Well, the Education Secretary's plan will cost tens of millions of pounds and possibly involve national lottery money as well. And that particular combination may well point to one striking problem.
Oh?
Yes. Together with Richard Shepston of the Campaign for Real Education, I am arguing that this would largely be a waste of taxpayers' money.
But the Education Secretary's plan does have merit. Many middle-class teenagers, on their own, already do take part in, say, digging wells in Africa or mountaineering in Wales. But there are many for whom these are not practicable options. Among those with such an inadequate background or environmental support network, projects and adventures like these are completely unknown. Precisely these teenagers would benefit from such opportunities.
These underprivileged youth need this programme like anyone else. But in a system designed by government acting as nanny, there is always more opportunity for monetary waste than there is for educational gain. And who wants a nanny state?
But we do need to try to meet this tremendous problem. Aren't you aware that many of this group remain unemployed at 21 and are headed for a life of welfare dependency or crime?
When government takes over a scheme, whatever the purpose, as long as it involves help, aid or assistance, it automatically becomes one part of the welfare system. So teenagers would drift into this as they float along into the welfare stream. What youth need is an opportunity to be challenged to meet real life, work in real jobs, have real adventures, not something put on by the secretaries for education and culture.
I fail to see your opposition to this excellent programme. Are you afraid this will replace your trekking organisation?
No, by no means. Since the government intends participation to be voluntary, it would actually have been quite a windfall for us. In fact, we could double our operations immediately. But we wish to continue giving a quality experience to those who come to us. We see real maturation among our teenagers. And remember, the bulk of them do come from so-called underprivileged homes.
Now listen to the same presentation in five sections. Look at questions 13 and 14.
I'm very pleased to talk to Jack Shills today. Jack, you're associated with the charity Midland Trekking. Would you tell us about your organisation?
We focus on giving 16-year-olds hands-on experience trekking here in the British Midlands. Our courses typically last from a fortnight to a month, teaching skills and strengthening minds and bodies. We accept both paying customers as well as teenagers on grants. You see, we have a bit of funding from a couple of local foundations, but this situation may soon change.
Yes, why is that?
The Ministry of Education has recently come up with a scheme to offer all 16-year-olds what they call a growing up course. They're very concerned that many adolescents find it difficult to make the transition between school and adult life.
Answer questions 13 and 14. Look at questions 15 and 16.
What's the precise problem?
Many school leavers mature too slowly, which harms their chances of getting a job or a place at a university. There are, in fact, 100,000 plus teenagers who fail to progress satisfactorily after leaving school at 16, and they will be the primary target group in the ministry scheme. And remember, this is a considerable percentage of school leavers.
Answer questions 15 and 16, then look at questions 17 and 18.
How will this be funded?
Well, the Education Secretary's plan will cost tens of millions of pounds and possibly involve national lottery money as well. And that particular combination may well point to one striking problem.
Oh?
Yes. Together with Richard Shepston of the Campaign for Real Education, I am arguing that this would largely be a waste of taxpayers' money.
But the Education Secretary's plan does have merit. Many middle-class teenagers, on their own, already do take part in, say, digging wells in Africa or mountaineering in Wales. But there are many for whom these are not practicable options. Among those with such an inadequate background or environmental support network, projects and adventures like these are completely unknown. Precisely these teenagers would benefit from such opportunities.
Answer questions 17 and 18. Look at questions 19 and 20.
These underprivileged youth need this programme like anyone else. But in a system designed by government acting as nanny, there is always more opportunity for monetary waste than there is for educational gain. And who wants a nanny state?
But we do need to try to meet this tremendous problem. Aren't you aware that many of this group remain unemployed at 21 and are headed for a life of welfare dependency or crime?
Answer questions 19 and 20, then look at questions 21 and 22.
When government takes over a scheme, whatever the purpose, as long as it involves help, aid or assistance, it automatically becomes one part of the welfare system. So teenagers would drift into this as they float along into the welfare stream. What youth need is an opportunity to be challenged to meet real life, work in real jobs, have real adventures, not something put on by the Secretaries for Education and Culture.
I fail to see your opposition to this excellent programme. Are you afraid this will replace your trekking organisation?
No, by no means. Since the government intends participation to be voluntary, it would actually have been quite a windfall for us. In fact, we could double our operations immediately. But we wish to continue giving a quality experience to those who come to us. We see real maturation among our teenagers. And remember, the bulk of them do come from so-called underprivileged homes.
Answer questions 21 and 22. This is the third part of the test. In this part, you will hear 8 short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 23.
Hello, ma'am. Welcome to Imogene's Boutique. May I help you?
I'm just looking. Thanks.
Please feel free. I'll be right over there if you want to ask me anything.
Answer question 23. Look at question 24.
Why isn't this train moving?
Didn't you hear the announcement?
What? Was there an announcement?
Yeah. They said there's some sort of blockage on the line.
Any idea what it is?
No, they didn't say. But they did say that we'd be moving again in about 10 minutes.
Thanks. I was getting a bit worried.
Answer question 24, then look at question 25.
I think we'll have to go and talk to John about yesterday.
Well, the whole idea of begging forgiveness from John is foreign to me. After all, he was the one who was offensive at the meeting, not us.
That's right. It's just asking too much. Of you, well, of both of us.
Yes, I can't imagine why he was like that. He's not usually like that at all.
Answer question 25, look at question 26.
Have you heard that Susan left Bill?
No, you don't say. How'd you find out?
I got it straight from the horse's mouth. Poor fellow.
Answer question 26, then look at question 27.
I expect we'll get a really nice dinner, and then we'll be in Paris. This Concorde is really fast. Ah, what a life. This is luxury.
Yes, but...
What? Don't tell me you're one of those white-knuckle flyers, John. Oh, my. And I was so looking forward to an absolutely wonderful flight. I really do need a good break from work.
No, nothing like that. I just think I forgot to pack my good suit. What will I wear at the meeting next Monday?
Answer question 27. Look at question 28.
Were you at the chess tournament yesterday?
Yeah, that was something. John Meade won hands down. He really didn't have to lift a finger.
I know. But after all, I don't really think his opponent was an international grandmaster. So he wasn't quite fair.
Oh, no, no. You must have heard incorrectly. They were both grandmasters. It was a fair match.
Answer question 28, then look at question 29.
How's your chemistry course going?
Not bad. There hasn't been much lab work, but we've got a midterm test next week. I guess it's time to hit the books.
Huh? It's much too late for that. What were you thinking of?
Answer question 29, then look at question 30.
What are you fixing, John? This kitchen looks a mess.
Sauce for some pasta. Here, would you like a taste? It's my special recipe.
Sure. Is it awfully hot? Where did you get the recipe?
I made it especially for you, love. Isn't it fantastic? I think that the fresh sage really adds to it.
Not bad. Are you going to clean up when you're done?
Answer question 30. This is the fourth part of the test. There are five sections in this part. Each section is a separate story. You will hear each section twice. After you hear the section the second time, you will have time to answer that section. Then you will go on to the next section. You will write in English. You must write your answers on the special answer sheet. Question A. Listen to the first section.
Teenagers from all over the states recently participated in the LifeSmarts Consumer Challenge. One of the final questions was what to do when the power is out and your fridge warms up. What do you do with food that is kept at over the normal 40 degrees Fahrenheit for 2 hours or more? And you really must know that the problem item is chilled cookie dough, not, say, butter, hard cheese, or even broccoli. The other items will all survive quite nicely. LifeSmarts is an annual event sponsored by the National Coalition for Consumer Education.
Now listen to this section again and then answer question A.
Teenagers from all over the states recently participated in the LifeSmarts Consumer Challenge. One of the final questions was what to do when the power is out and your fridge warms up. What do you do with food that is kept at over the normal 40 degrees Fahrenheit for 2 hours or more? And you really must know that the problem item is chilled cookie dough, not, say, butter, hard cheese, or even broccoli. The other items will all survive quite nicely. Life Smarts is an annual event sponsored by the National Coalition for Consumer Education.
Question B. Listen to the next section.
Singers Hill Synagogue in Birmingham City Centre was built within the old Jewish quarter in the mid-19th century by immigrants fleeing persecution in Tsarist Russia. The church, an architectural jewel, is now a Grade II listed building, so it must be maintained. But the Orthodox synagogue's attendance, formerly 1,500 on the Sabbath, has now dwindled to some 150 persons. The congregation will eventually merge with another, probably in the suburbs.
Now listen to this section again and then answer question B.
Singers Hill Synagogue in Birmingham City Centre was built within the old Jewish quarter in the mid-19th century by immigrants fleeing persecution in Tsarist Russia. The church, an architectural jewel, is now a Grade II listed building, so it must be maintained. But the Orthodox synagogue's attendance, formerly 1,500 on the Sabbath, has now dwindled to some 150 persons. The congregation will eventually merge with another, probably in the suburbs.
Question C. Listen to the next section.
Steve Hodges regularly pedals to work in order to stay fit. Last week, he was fined $500 for drunk driving. He hit three other bicyclists near the intersection of 2nd and Main while on his way downtown. This was not the first time he got such a fine. Oh, well.
Now listen to this section again and then answer question C.
Steve Hodges regularly pedals to work in order to stay fit. Last week, he was fined $500 for drunk driving. He hit three other bicyclists near the intersection of 2nd and Main while on his way downtown. This was not the first time he got such a fine. Oh, well.
Question D. Listen to the next section.
The enormous increase in mobile phone use is putting huge pressure on the 999 emergency system in London. In a press release, Sir Paul Gordon, Metropolitan Police Commissioner, stated that the police force was beginning to be severely undermanned. To make matters worse, there were somewhat in excess of 100,000 mistake 999 calls from mobiles last year. In further news, Sir Paul has announced the start-up of a new anti-crime division.
Now listen to this section again and then answer question D.
The enormous increase in mobile phone use is putting huge pressure on the 999 emergency system in London. In a press release, Sir Paul Gordon, Metropolitan Police Commissioner, stated that the police force was beginning to be severely undermanned. To make matters worse, there were somewhat in excess of 100,000 mistake 999 calls from mobiles last year. In further news, Sir Paul has announced the start-up of a new anti-crime division.
Question E. Listen to the next section.
A few weeks ago, a truck pulled up at the front door of the hen house in Pittsburgh. Rushing out, the manager yelled that deliveries went out back. In the truck was an unhappy customer who was returning 800 gallons of bottled water, 200 pounds of sugar, 500 pounds of flour. The list went on and on. But no problem. The customer had receipts for everything. But if he thought the manager would simply take everything back with a smile, he was badly mistaken.
Now listen to this section again and then answer question E.
A few weeks ago, a truck pulled up at the front door of the hen house in Pittsburgh. Rushing out, the manager yelled that deliveries went out back. In the truck was an unhappy customer who was returning 800 gallons of bottled water, 200 pounds of sugar, 500 pounds of flour. The list went on and on. But no problem. The customer had receipts for everything. But if he thought the manager would simply take everything back with a smile, he was badly mistaken.
This is the end of the test. You will now have about 8 minutes in which to blacken with a pencil the ovals indicating your answers and to check the written answers. Remember to make sure you have written the following information on your answer sheet: your name and number and the name and number of your school. Also make sure that the information needed for the exam has been carefully marked in. Thank you.